October 18th, 1978. A new pope ascends to be the successor of St. Peter. No one knew who he was. He's the first Slavic pope, Polish pope, in the history of the church, the first non-Italian pope in 455 years. So you know him as St. John Paul II. You have to know that his entering into as a successor of St. Peter was completely off the radar. Nobody thought this was coming. And that set up everything. So, we have a new pope, October 1978. And then his first trip to his homeland. The first visit ever from a pope to Catholic Poland. The day, June 2nd, 1979. Now, those of you who are history majors, you'll know what's going on in Poland in 1979. The Polish people say that they're the only country that lost World War II twice, because the Nazis invaded, and then when the Nazis were removed, the Polish people got rewarded with communist Soviet Union, Stalin. And so they're oppressed, completely oppressed. A state-run atheistic religion, it's a religion, a state-run atheistic totalitarian regime is imposed on the Polish people who are Catholic to the core. And John Paul II says, I want to go home. I want to go home to my country. And the government is in a bind, because how could they say no? They would look so weak if they say no to the Pope. And yet, they're terrified of this man, because the Polish people are Catholic to the core. They're just being imposed upon by the communists. They actually don't believe anything that the communists are telling them. So what happens? Well, they have to say yes. So the Pope comes. And the state-run media, not so different in some ways than today, right? They control the message, and they're trying to make it like no big deal, it's not a big deal, it's not a big deal, except it is a big deal. It's a huge deal. As soon as the Pope lands in his homeland in Poland, he gets off the plane, he bends down, and he kisses the ground, the tarmac at the airport. And every church bell in Poland rings. Every church bell in Poland rings a welcome. Now they're trying to control the message. So what you'd see on TV or on the radio are just short little snippets, right? Just the Pope. And they think that, well, you know, hopefully not that many people will come. We've been controlling the schools. We've been controlling the media. So hopefully not that many people will come. Except they came, and they came, and they came. And on June 2nd, the Pope goes into Warsaw, which is the capital of Poland, and he celebrates an outdoor mass at Victory Square, renamed by the communists as a part of their triumph. And he celebrates mass. And 250,000 people pack the square, and the Pope begins preaching, and he preaches about Jesus Christ as the key to the human heart, what they were made for. And as he's preaching, the people begin to chant, we want God. We want God. We want God. And then they begin to actually chant, and they sing a Latin hymn, Christus vincit. Christus regnat, Christus imperat, Christ conquers, Christ reigns, Christ commands. And they sing and they sing, and the Pope lets them sing. And then at a certain point, because it's a square, a city square, there's buildings and the communist observers are on the top of the buildings, and the Pope gestures to the people. And then he looks up at the communists and he gestures to them. And then he gestures back to the people. Game set, and match. Because the Iron Curtain is torn there in that moment. And within 15 years, the Soviet Union dissolves. Country after country reclaims their inherent dignity and throws off the communist rule. Not with bloody, bloody wars, but simply by reclaiming who they are. And the force of that energy and the force of that reality, a spiritual force, brings the Soviet Union to its knees, and it no longer exists. Now, I love that story. I love it. It's great to tell. It's good for you because you need to know your history, and you need to know that that happened. All right, now, I thought of that story today as I was praying with the gospel for tonight, where we hear about the transfiguration. Why? Well, the transfiguration is the fourth luminous mystery. I don't know if you know this, but every mystery of the rosary has a virtue attached to it. So like the first joyful mystery, the virtue is humility, right? The third sorrowful mystery, right? The virtue is moral courage, right? Well, the fourth luminous mystery is the transfiguration that we just heard. And that virtue is the desire for holiness. Or, to say it a different way, the desire for God. The Polish people in 1979 could roar, "We want God." Could we today? Could we roar that? We want God. What do we want? What do we really desire? It's good in Lent to ask those questions, because Lent is a very intentional time of examining our desires, what we want. And it's meant to be a very intense time of purifying those very same desires so that we want the right things and we want them with great passion. See, I want to be clear. Desire is a good thing, provided that that desire is rightly ordered and pointed in the right direction. So, a great saint like Saint Augustine, who knew, by the way, very well what happens and what damage is done when desires are wrongly pointed, when they're disordered, Saint Augustine would say, the whole of the Christian life is nothing other than holy desire. The whole of the Christian life, nothing other than holy desire. So we're meant to have strong desires, to be passionate people, not to be numb or indifferent, but to be bold. In fact, God in the book of Revelation says, I wish that you were either hot or cold, not lukewarm. In fact, if you're lukewarm, the Lord says he'll vomit us out of his mouth. Right? So we're meant to be passionate, on fire for God, with great and bold desires. But our hearts have been wounded by sin. They've been wounded in a grievous way, and the desires of our hearts need to be healed. They need to be set aright. And if anyone has engaged his spiritual life at all, you know that to be true, that we have conflicting desires in our hearts. They need to be purified. They need to be set right. And that is what the Lord wants us to ponder during this Lent. Do we want God? Do you want God? The answer is yes, okay? Because every single heart wants God at the deepest level. The same Saint Augustine who says the whole of the Christian life is nothing other than holy desire says, our hearts are restless until they rest in you. You have made us for yourself, O God. Of restless hearts, every heart, every single person you will ever meet is meant to know God. It's part of our human nature. Now, that desire, and this is the risk in our culture, can be buried beneath all sorts of other desires. And that's the thing. that deepest desire for God can be smothered, even choked off by so many other things. And that's the danger, especially in our culture, where we get everything we want whenever we want it. Well, then I desire superficial things. And I can distract myself with this desire, and then that desire, and then that desire, and then that desire. And so the church, in her wisdom, gives us Lent, where she says, step away from some of those other desires. Examine them. Purify them. Let the Lord set them aright, because if we step away from all these other things that dominate our attention, then we can get to the real desire of our hearts, which is always for God. Lent's a time we take a good, hard look at the desires that are most operative in us. Want to know which ones are most operative in you? Here's a simple way. Look how and where you spend your time when you aren't compelled to do something else. Look how and where you spend your time when you aren't compelled to do something else, like work or class. What do you do with your time when you're not compelled to do something else? Friends, if you don't spend any time praying, if you don't make time for God when you're not compelled to do something else, then it's clear that something else is the deepest desire of your heart at that moment. It's that clear. And so Lent comes around and the church asks us to look at what we're about in those moments. What do we really desire? What do we really want? So we have to look at how we spend our time. We have to be honest. And then we have to choose, because we can choose differently. And friends, you have to make choices. See, if you're free, if your time is free and you don't spend any time in prayer, then you're choosing to not want God. If you could come to Mass during the week, and you're like, I don't want to. I'm going to play Xbox, PlayStation. I'm just going to poke around on Instagram. Right? Then you don't want God. And that's good for us to be confronted with that question, because we have to choose. We have to choose. St. Irenaeus, all the way back to the second century, he said, God would not save us without us. God would not save us without us. See, we have to play a part. Now, here's the good news. God wants us. He wants us. The Father sends his Son. The Father gives his Son to us. Jesus comes willingly for us. The Father says, this is my beloved Son, listen to him. I want you to know him. And Jesus is like, I'm here for you. What does Jesus say to us that we should listen to? Not just in his words, but in his very presence. What does he say? He says, like, I'm on your side. He's all in for us. That's why St. Paul, who knew Jesus, who desired God, he could say, if God is for us, who can be against us? If God's on our side, who could be against us? He's all in for us. See, God's deepest desire, because he has desires, is for you and me to be saved, to be set free, and then to share in his divine life. That's what it's all about. That's what this whole life is about. That's what your whole life is about. The desire for God meeting your desire for him. And then every adventure opens up when his desire and your desire touch. Everything changes. What happens when our deepest desires match the desires of God? We begin to radiate his light, his love, his joy, his courage, his strength, his peace, him. We radiate Jesus. That's what happens. The light that shines from Jesus in tonight's gospel begins to shine in us. and it penetrates all the dark areas of our hearts, all the desires that are disordered. His light shines there, and his light conquers. St. John writes, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness cannot overcome it. It cannot overcome any darkness of sin, any darkness of fear, any darkness of doubt, and even any darkness of death. Christ's light conquers. My friends, God has chosen us. He has chosen us. He has chosen you in a personal way. Pray with that, please. God has chosen you. He wants you. Friends, choose him. Desire him. Make the choice and make it bold. Do you want God? I pray that you do.